Happy New Year, Bulls Nation. Welcome back to the Rebuildable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Gentile. Last week, we were recapping the 2019 calendar year, but now it's 2020. Does that mean it's new year, new Bulls? Not really. The Bulls suffered losses to the Jazz and Celtics to start January, falling to 13-23, 10th in the Eastern Conference. Ouch. You know, you think about all the promise that we had coming into the season, and it's sort of been a little concerning. You know, them being 10 games under 500 wouldn't have been a huge shock before the season started, but I think it's the way they've lost. There's been a lot of close games, a lot of late leads that they've blown that have come back to bite them. I think we've talked about it so many times on this podcast, but you know, there's been opportunities for them to win against some of the better teams in the league, and they just haven't been able to close the deal. And I think if you need to get into the playoff picture, you have to win those types of games. So you look at the bottom portion of the East, and it's there for the taking, but the Bulls haven't been able to capitalize. You know, maybe they'll turn it around. Fortunately for us, C. Red Fred, yes, the self-proclaimed Bulls prophet, C. Red Fred, is going to join us to discuss the outlook for 2020 and give his opinion on why things have gone wrong. But before we do that, since our last episode, the NBA lost one of its most influential leaders. Former Commissioner David Stern died at age 77 last week. He had suffered a brain hemorrhage a few weeks back, and he just never recovered. When you think about David Stern's impact, he really was a visionary in the NBA. He helped market individual stars not only to the United States, but globally. I think that was probably his biggest impact on the NBA, was bringing it from a national game to a global entity. And, you know, it's nowhere where it is today without David Stern. You know, if you just think of where the game is now, we have all these players that came from overseas. You know, Dirk Nowitzki is probably one of the greatest international players of all time. Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili. Right now we have Luka Doncic. On the Chicago Bulls, we have Lauri Markkanen. You know, there's a lot of players that have come from all over the world. You know, Joel Embiid, and are now playing in the NBA. And David Stern was one of the biggest reasons that happened, that we started seeing more players coming into the NBA from around the world. So really sad loss, and it's kind of cool though to see all the support and all the stories about David Stern sort of pour in really in the last week. I want to actually bring in C. Red Fred now. Fred, thanks for joining us. I wanted to start with your thoughts on David Stern. Just how vital do you think his impact was on the NBA?
Well, definitely, I think business-wise, it's hard to argue that, you know, he was probably one of the greatest commissioners of all time of any major sport. If you look where the NBA was in the early 80s and compare it to where it was when he finally, you know, left the league, there's no debate that he exponentially increased the value of the league and every franchise associated with it. So I think he did a great job not only creating a viable league that I think at times was seriously in danger in the early 80s. It was definitely helped by the entrance of Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, but it was nowhere near as popular as it is today. So business-wise, you can't argue with that. He also, I think, did a really good job of making it more of a global institution. You know, in the United States, I'd still say football is probably number one, and baseball too, just to the longevity and the history of that sport. But I think basketball is right there at three. Probably even two. It's probably past baseball by now. But worldwide, neither of those sports really compete with the NBA. I mean, if you count every human on the planet, soccer is probably the number one sport. And I think Stern had a lot to do with making basketball number two, definitely with the Yao Ming, getting him in China's interest in the league. Basketball-wise, I think it's pretty hard to screw up. You know, he, as you said, as we were talking offline, he came into the became commissioner in 1984. It's pretty hard to screw up a superstar like Michael Jordan, who entered the league in 1984. I mean, you basically had to make sure you didn't screw that up and really take, you know, grab on his cape and go for the ride. Because I had some serious problems, honestly, with the way he ran the league early on. If you look at, you have a superstar like Michael Jordan and you allow the game in the late 80s to degenerate into this bad boy Pistons era type of basketball where you had a complete hack like Bill Laimbeer allowed to just basically run roughshod over an asset, an NBA hero, a legend like Michael Jordan. It's inexcusable. That only that that didn't just go on through the 80s. He allowed that to go on to the early 90s, to those hack team Knicks, all the way until 1994, by the time Jordan had left. And then I encourage everybody who's listening to this, go to the video and watch JoJo English and Derek Harper in the playoffs, Bulls and Knicks, brawl it out while Stern is sitting in the stands a few rows up. It pretty much changed after that. He finally got a handle on the insane nonsense that was going on in the league.
It's crazy. I watched that brawl, believe it or not, like 3 weeks ago. I was just going through YouTube and I came across the 94 playoff series against the Knicks and saw that brawl. And, you know, you really think about it, there was a massive kind of shift right from that moment on of how those kind of incidents were treated. And then, of course, we remember, you know, the Malice at the Palace. That changed everything, too.
Yeah, it changed everything. But for even to allow the game to degenerate that way, to me, it was a real mistake and a real misstep on his part. But, you know, he did, to his credit, get a handle on it and all that nonsense stopped and the league continued to grow. You know, I don't want to like just act like he didn't do a good job. There's no doubt he did. But I think his greatest achievements were on the business side of the game, mm-hmm. as opposed to how he ran the league. I wasn't a real massive fan of the way he allowed the league to head, at least in the late 80s, early 90s, especially.
It's pretty amazing, though. I think over that, he had a 30-year period where he was commissioner. And you think about from the moment he entered in where it was on tape delay and to where it was the moment he walked out the door and handed it over to Adam Silver. You just see that it was really an amazing job he did. And honestly, like as Bulls fans, you know, you and I were around for that dynasty era. And David Stern's impact sort of coincided with the rise of the Chicago Bulls and the rise of MJ. And so you're right, it was pretty hard to screw up, but he did have the business sense to really make that thing work and to use it to his advantage.
No doubt. It's interesting. Was that the first time you saw that JoJo English brawl? I can't wait to, I hope some of your listeners run and go watch that. Was that the first time you saw it?
I've seen it a few times before, but it was the first time I ever watched like the full feed from the actual game itself. And, you know, I probably saw it as a kid, but it was like one of the first times I really watched the moment of when the brawl happened to, you know, the like 5 to 10 minutes afterwards where they were trying to get everything together. And it was interesting to watch. You had all the security pulling John Starks off and Patrick Ewing off. It was crazy.
Yeah. One thing I did notice too, I watched recently a Bulls Pistons game from the Eastern Conference Finals in 1991. And there was a specific play that really comes to mind that I was watching. It was Pippen driving down the lane. And Mark Aguirre hit him with like a forearm shiver that in today's game, he would have been suspended for 10 to 20 games. And in that era, it was like side out. It's insane. Mm-hmm. The difference in the physicality of that era and this era. And that's why I always laugh when people are like, Jordan, how would he have done this era? Jordan would have adapted to any way he wanted to. And if, you know, now it's a 3-point shooting era, he would have adapted to it. But more importantly, he could have got around anybody. I mean, it was a much more physical era. And I think guys like, Steph Curry would have suffered greatly in that era.
Jordan would have probably averaged like 25 alone from the foul line in this era. You breathe on Michael, he would have been shooting a lot of free throws. So let's kind of get into the present here and get to our Bulls right now. Bulls are 13-23, 10th in the Eastern Conference. You are the self-proclaimed prophet of Bulls Nation. And I'm curious, where the Bulls are right now, how shocked are you that the Bulls are 10 games under 500 and on the outside looking in? I know you had a rosier outlook. So how are you processing all this right now?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm not self-proclaimed. There's a group of scientists at the University of Northeast Dakota, Idaho, excuse me.
Oh, God.
That have analyzed my tweets and found that they're 93% accurate. No, my mantra has been 7th pick and 17, 7th pick and 18, 7th pick and 19. If we had a different head coach, I brought this up yesterday. Brad Stevens was coaching the Chicago Bulls with the current talent level. Is there anybody out there that really doesn't believe they would be closer to 500 and at the 7th seed as I predicted? I did not foresee Jim Boylan screwing this up as much as he has. That said, they're still 10th and within shouting distance of the playoff spot in the 8th seed. They're not far away from where I predicted they would be. yes, it's been a disaster, but this is exactly what I expected. I expected there would be six teams that were clear favorites to be in the playoffs. I didn't expect Miami to play as well as they have, but I thought there were six teams there. And there'd be other teams, the teams pretty much that I had predicted in the offseason would be battling for 7 and 8. And the Bulls, I expected to have, well, you look at it, they blew 26-point lead against Oklahoma City, 19-point lead against the Lakers, 18-point lead against the Knicks, 10-point lead against the Cavs, 10-point lead against the – I mean, it goes on and on. 10-point lead last night against Boston. You win four of those games, you're right near the seventh seed, you know. So I don't feel – I feel like the team is nowhere near – the record is nowhere near commensurate with their talent. Clear to anybody who's watching the, you know, watching the games.
I think you're 100% right on one thing here, and I tend to be a little bit more pessimistic than you are, but I do agree with you on one thing here, that it's been the way they've lost. The fact that they're, you know, 13-23, I don't think would have shocked me coming into the year, but maybe with the way they've lost games, I think that's what stunned me the most, because they've had some of these better teams in the league on the ropes. It's just been these weird decisions by Jim Boylan. I mean, with Jim Boylan, what is it that upset you the most with him this season? I'm sure there's a lot, but are there like a couple things that really make you question how he is able to be a head coach in the NBA?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's clear. I mean, there's really, what are the two most important facts? I think in general, NBA coaches are overrated. To me, in the NBA, there's probably, you can count on one hand the number of coaches that make a significant impact in winning and losing. Overall, everybody's kind of in this big group, and in the NBA, it's talent wins usually, unless you're exceptionally incompetent. Look at Steve Kerr. You know, is he suddenly a poor coach because Golden State's awful? No, they lost two of their best players, and they're not, you know, they're not winning. But this guy specifically, you control two things primarily: rotations, allocation of minutes, or rotations, and timeouts. I mean, that's a huge thing. And he's failed miserably in both of them. I brought up, you know, I know everybody's going to roll their eyes about Denzel Valentine, Daniel Gafford. I was at a practice. I was able to see a practice in early October at the United Center that was open to, you know, 100 or so season ticket holders. And I'm not a season ticket holder, but Doug Tonis brought me as his guest. And it was clear as day that Daniel Gafford was a defensive force who should have been playing more. He didn't play for almost the entire first month. We had to endure minute after minute of Luke Kornet, 100 plus minutes of that stiff shooting shots at 20% rate with his only alleged talents being able to hit a three-point line. You can't keep on giving that guy minutes. This guy is completely inconsistent. I'm going to bring up something last night that was said by Thad Young in Darnell Mayberry's article, and he brought it up, and I thought this was a veiled shot. Specifically, there were several veiled shots in yesterday's post game. What did he say? Young said, we're in a difficult spot. This is unusual, quote unquote. This is a new, very unusual territory when you start moving guys in and out of the lineup and stuff like that. It's one of those things that we just have to continue to figure out as we go. I think when you start shifting guys, it throws a lot of different things off with what we do as a team, end quote. How can you expect Denzel Valentine to perform well when 3 weeks ago, yesterday night, he was an integral part of us beating the Clippers in our only win over a above 500 team. Then his minutes are like 6, 11, 5. It's all over the place. You have no certainty as a member of the rotation. He'll let guys like Kobe White continue to play when they're clearly struggling. And then he'll give like his coach's son, Ryan A., plenty of time. But a guy like Valentine, he makes one mistake, he's out. Rotation. Players hate that kind of stuff. They want certainty in roles. And I'm not saying you grant guys like Luke Kornet, you know, allow him to play for multiple weeks. But in general, I believe you should give a player 7 to 10 games.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be, you know, 7 to 10 games. If he continues to fail over that period of time, then you got to try somebody else. But just don't. What he's done with Valentine is inexcusable to me. This team's sorely lacking offensively. He's clearly one of their better offensive players just in terms of shooting. What he's done is inexcusable. Hey, he plays 8 guys last night. I mean, is this reality what's happening here with this complete moron? Waste his timeouts with 8 minutes left. There's one of the Phil Jackson books that I read religiously specifically mentioned the importance of having at least one timeout for the last 10 seconds of every game. We just talked about that 1994 Knicks Bulls series. that famous shot with Kukoc with 1.8 seconds left wouldn't have happened if he didn't have any timeouts left. The Bulls were able to advance the ball at midcourt and then do a fadeaway shot. You know, he did his famous fadeaway. Mm-hmm. How can you, as a coach, have no timeouts with 8 minutes left in the game?
Well, in January, the fact that he doubled down on it after the Celtics game too, saying basically, well, you know, we're prepared for those moments when, you know, we're not afraid to not have timeouts. I mean, that's just stupid. You know, you remember there was the playoff series against the Celtics in 2009 where Vinny Del Negro, I believe in game two, was without timeouts and it cost them.
Yeah, Ben Gordon was on the bench in game two. He had 42 points. Ben Gordon finished that game with the Bulls. It was a one possession game on the bench because the idiot coach, Vinny Del Negro. You know, another thing people forget was the color man on that game was Doug Collins. And Doug Collins specifically mentioned that you need to have timeouts. He's out of his timeout. So somebody has to sit this guy down and explain to him, you can't do this. And another thing, I wish somebody asked a follow-up question. NBA practice time is a precious thing. You don't get unlimited practice time. Are you really wasting your time on a full court out of bounds play with no timeout? I mean, you should have one play for that because it's basically Leitner versus Kentucky. And that's a famous full court out of bounds play that worked, but 99.9% of them aren't going to work. What kind of nonsense is he talking about? It's just beyond irritating, and he's a horrible communicator, and that's just somebody you can't have as your head coach. And you know, I've been a long defender of John Paxson's ability to draft talent. I don't know if you saw the debates I've had Waddle and Sylvie online and recently about who do you have more faith in going forward, John Paxson or Ryan Pace?
I did hear you on the radio a few days ago talking about this on ESPN 1000.
Did you want to share your thoughts on that?
Well, you're not going to like it. Honestly, I don't know if I have faith in. I don't know if I have faith in either of them. With Ryan Pace, he's probably earned the benefit of the doubt in terms of just recency bias. Now, if the Bears go out and have another, you know, kind of questionable draft where he makes a lot of cute moves up for guys with high, you know, ceilings but very crappy floors, I think that's going to kind of sway my opinion. And honestly, like, I always was a big supporter of John Paxson. In fact, I used to side with you a lot during the Thibs dispute. You'd call in a lot with that one guy who would always...
Phil lives in his parents' basement in Rogers Park, yeah.
Every time you would call in and talk about that, I was always on your side. I think just for me, it's more of time. I feel like the clock's run out on John Paxson. Now, having said that, in a vacuum, I do think the moves he made this offseason were pretty solid, except for the hiring of Jim Boylan. That, to me, like, not doing a coaching search, and I brought that up when you came on grading Garpax, I think that, to me, was a huge sin not to do a coaching search and try to get somebody in here that deserved the job. I just didn't think Jim Boylan deserved the job. There wasn't enough that made me think he was the guy that could help with this young roster and develop this young roster. So, to me, it's sort of just wasted time having him here right now. So, that's why I would say maybe I'm going to give Ryan Pace a little more wiggle room. And also, I'm a little more of a Matt Nagy fan.
Quick,
so I guess.
Just let me state, and you make a great point, because to me, this is a fireable offense to turn this team over to this guy. What I don't know is what kind of restrictions were put on John Paxson in terms of hiring a coach. Did he have the ability to really do that? Because I know what happened when Scott Skiles was fired and they moved on from the interim coach. His first choice was Mike D'Antoni. That was nixed. His second choice was Doug Collins. That was next, and Vinny Del Negro was the third choice, and that was accepted because he was cheap enough. So number one and two were excellent options that he just wanted to go with. So, you know, we don't know that. But if you're going to talk about talent, like I bring this up continually, Paxson, we're in both leagues, the NFL and the NBA, you got to hit on your top 10 picks, especially in the NBA. Mm-hmm. He's hit on 8 of 9. The one miss he had was Tyrus Thomas, and after 3 seasons – there were still a lot of Bulls fans telling me how talented Tyrus Thomas was. There were a lot of teams in the NBA that wanted to pay him a lot of money. And John Paxson said, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I'm going to move on from my mistake. I'm going to trade him for a conditional first-round pick to the Charlotte Hornets and see you later, Tyrus Thomas. 3 full seasons into Mitch, we have Ryan Pace doubling down. He's had three top 10 picks in Mitch Trubisky, Floyd, and Kevin White. They've all arguably been major busts. I don't even think it's comparable if we're talking about talent evaluation.
I think it's a little tougher, though, Fred, with the NFL, because, well, when you're comparing, I mean, the two. If you compare NBA and NFL, you get more cracks in the NFL, so that kind of helps bolster your resume.
Totally.
I think Ryan Pace, where he gets the benefit of the doubt from some fans, and I'm starting to wane on him, so, you know, let me make that clear. I'm not saying he's the greatest GM in town, but the one thing that he has done well is fill out the roster in the later rounds. And he's had some interesting hits, and I think probably the biggest one right now, and we just saw he got the extension, was Eddie Jackson. So, like, I think that's what has given people more elation there. I think with Pax, it's been the fact that, yeah, they've been able to get some decent picks in the draft, but then making those other necessary moves to get into title contention, I think that's where, like, someone like me gets a little frustrated. I think that's where I would like to see more from
Eddie Jackson. Was a fourth-round pick that fell because of injury concerns, and it worked out for him.
And a lot of teams passed too on that. So, you know, you got to give Ryan Pace credit.
To me, there's no. If you look at, you know, there's two rounds in the NBA. You get, like, basically two picks. If you look at the percentage of hits for total picks, it's funny. You can take any GM, failed GM in the NFL. Somebody's going to have a hit. You got seven rounds. It's like, it's like I'm this bizarro world when I'm talking about Ryan Pace. Tariq Cohen, what a find, you know, what a great pick. Tariq, really? Is he that great? Like, he's a fourth round pick. Yes, he's great for a fourth rounder. He's not a legit top 10 NFL running back. Wow, we're like in bizarro world. People are talking like some of these guys that he's got are incredible. Yeah, he got Khalil Mack. You can't do something like that in the NBA. You got to match salaries. He traded away years of draft assets to get Khalil Mack. I'm not going to argue if it was right or wrong. I know the Oakland Raiders did some really nice things with a lot of those picks that maybe in the long run, who knows, is going to look better. I love Khalil Mack. But, I mean, it's just like we haven't won a playoff game for the Bears since 2010. It's like I don't even think this is comparable. It's insanity. 2011, excuse me.
Well, I was going to say, what you bring up, though, I mean, that's a totally fair point. I think it's important that people kind of look at it, though, a little balance. But that's a good point, too. You do have to match salary when you do want to make those trades in the NBA. It's way different with the NFL. It's a little easier in that league. I want to get back to the Bulls. How do you think, given the situation the Bulls are in right now, how do you think they can get out of it? Are they going to have to win this in spite of Jim Boylen? And what are the things they're going to have to do to make your prediction and your prophecy come into fruition? How are they going to get into the playoffs?
They got to make the playoffs. I mean, so, yeah, this is a really interesting question. Do you want to be the eighth seed, or do you want to just, you know, be 9-10 and get into lottery again? I'm of the belief that Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and still Wendell Carter Jr., I think, is going to be a special player. He definitely is almost already there at the age of 20 defensively. He's incredible. And Kobe White, those four can form the core of a contender. Impossible, you know, as they evolve over the next few years, as they grow over the next few years. That's what you got to ask yourself. Do you believe that, or do you not? You know, things don't look great right now. That's the case with every great team. Golden State didn't look great in 2012, and they had Clay and they had Curry. You know, so it doesn't always look good early on, but it does evolve or improve as the seasons go on. The Bulls between this year and last year, it's like night and day. They're actually competing against good teams. We're not losing by 50 plus to the Celtics. You know, we were in that game yesterday. I see improvements. I think our coach has significantly hurt the development and held us back. Although, to his credit, the Bulls have been better defensively than I expected. I don't think, like, this team is lost. I'm a big believer in playoff currency. It's a completely different game. Zach LaVine's never played in a playoff game. I think having a first round loss against the Bucks is going to be extremely important for the development of those players. And if they can pull out a win or two, it's going to be even better for Wendell Carter Jr., Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen. I do not believe the team should start trading assets to tank, especially if Lauri is hurt and going to miss any amount of time. I was at the game last night. I'd be shocked if he plays anytime soon in the next 3 weeks. So Thad Young, which is a guy would have said, let's trade him. You know, now he's suddenly starter, and he's a very good backup who's now going to be a pretty solid starter. That's not a huge, he's a good player. Now I still think we're in position to get that eighth seed. The schedule's definitely a little harder in January, but do you really feel like Orlando's a lot better than us, especially without Jonathan Isaac? Do you really feel that the Knicks or any of those other teams that are fighting for the eighth seed, the Hornets, are better than the Bulls? I don't. I think we're all right there. And I'm seeing improvements, and I think this team should try to get the eighth seed and get that playoff currency that's so important for development of the team. But again, that depends on what you feel as a fan about the core four.
I do agree with you on that. I would like to see them get into the playoffs for those reasons. You have a very young core, and I think at some point you have to realize these are the guys you're going to have to ride this out with, and I would like to see them get in the playoffs. I guess, though, my question, though, to you would be, given where they're at right now, how does that happen? What do you think they have to overcome to do that?
Well, if Larry's out for any significant amount of time, he's played much better in December after a disastrous October and November, although he did every month I felt playing better. I thought he was really good at times last night against the Celtics. Now, if he's out for any period of time, you got to deal with that injury, but you do have a very capable backup in Thad Young. You just got to get Otto kind of back. I mean, you know, I know there's this now, Dog Bowl Nation has this thing going around where, you know, well, we should have had more wings. We should have had more wings. I just think this is such a ridiculous thing. It's like, yeah, every team wants more wings. Every team wants capable wings. What's your answer, though? They're not out there. There's not a lot of great wings in the NBA. And if they're out there, they're getting paid a lot of money. We're paying one of the best two-way wings in the NBA, Otto Porter Jr. He's been hurt since the first or second week of the season. His backup, a number one draft pick that I felt has very high ceiling defensively, and he's got a long way to go offensively, but I like him as a backup, has been hurt. The third option's a very good option in Denzel Valentine, and our idiot coach has decided to, you know, DNP him for 14 of the first 17 games and keep him out of rotation so he could have his son play as a three. It's beyond dumb. And so, Thad Young should have been given some minutes at the three, too. You had four wing options. You got a roster of 15. You can't have 10 wings. So it's not, you know, this is just ridiculous. And anytime I ask any of this some of my favorite people in the world, Marquet from Australia, who did you want? Who was the guy you wanted to bring as that wing? The answers are completely ludicrous. Like, we're going to go down the Justin Holiday route again? I never want to see that clown in this town again. I don't want to watch him brick jumper after jumper. No. We got plenty of wings. Our coach refuses to use the third string. So, you know, end of the story. So, now I'm off on a tangent. I'm so angry.
No, it's all good. I mean, this is the Fred I wanted on the show. I need the tangent ranting Fred. That's okay. The best Fred. A couple more questions before we wrap up here. I wanted to ask you about the trade deadline. Now, it's about a month away. If things are going well for the Bulls, do you expect any type of moves to be made for them to improve the roster? And if things go south, do you expect some guys to get moved at the deadline?
Well, I think if you're a smart team and a good team, you got to look at Dunn as an option for you, as an option for your team. So, like, you know, I don't know if it's Philly or Milwaukee or any of the contenders, the Lakers. I don't care who it is. If you have any asset, if I had a late first round pick, I'd give it up in a second for Chris Dunn. He is an elite perimeter defender. And you need a guy like him against the other best defenders and offensive perimeter players in the league. You look at him over a 10-day period. He basically shut down Jimmy Butler, Trae Young, Chris Paul, and who was the other guy that he played in that same? Paul George. Think about that. A guy who's, you know, 6 foot, 180, and Trae Young. He's also taking Jimmy Butler, who's 6'7", you know, 225. It's amazing the versatility that this guy has. And to me, I think there's a lot of teams that would be willing to offer something for him. My question is, I'm not sure I want to give him up for a late first round pick. You know, stars are found in the top 10. You know, a couple of years ago, I think it was 13 of the 15 players who made all NBA were found in the top 10. Rotation players are usually found from 11 to 20. And it's really a crapshoot from that point on. 20 and on, you might find some good players. You may not. You know, you might find a Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler. Those are pretty rare. Usually guys that are in the league for 2, 3, 4 years are found at the end of the first round, and second rounders more often than not are out of the league in 1 or 2 years. I think Chris Dunn is that good defensively. And there's a lot of metrics that show this. And I think our defense would absolutely tank without him. We're good defensively, not because of Jim Boylan. We're good defensively because of two players, Chris Dunn and Wendell Carter Jr.
Well, if the season was heading south, though, wouldn't you think about making that move for the sake of maybe getting some draft equity and possibly packaging up picks to move, you know, further up in the draft, or acquiring maybe even another rotational piece or veteran for next season?
Is the season heading that far south that we're out of playoff contention? How many games are we out right now? Two? Out of the final playoff spot?
Let's say things by the deadline just completely fall off. Would you then think about moving some of those pieces if it just drops out from here on out?
Yeah, we lose 10 games, but I don't believe we're going down that route. I mean, how can you look at the Bulls over, let's say, the last 10 games? We were 7-7 in December. We've been competitive. We blew a Miami game in overtime. We came down a last shot against the Raptors. We've been competitive in every game. I can think of one disappointing game, which was a Charlotte home loss on a Friday night. Was a disaster. But we've been competitive in almost every game. I don't feel like we're going to be go on a 10-game losing streak. I don't care who we're playing.
Doesn't it seem like we're setting a trend, though, with this throughout the whole season, where it's basically been a lot of really good moments but not sealing the deal with wins? Like, that's been the story since October.
No doubt, but, you know, consistency is not the hallmark of young teams. We're, like, second or third youngest team in the league. That's the biggest problem with young teams. They don't know how to close and don't know how to finish, and we're kind of learning that. You know, I thought that was a great win over the Clippers. And finally, that's where I'm like, oh, look, we saw Denzel Valentine come in, hit a couple big shots, and then, again, down the stretch in these games, we're not finishing great. A lot of that has to do because of the goofball we have as our head coach not putting the players in the position to succeed.
That's what I fear. Is that going to be a coach that's able to actually turn this whole thing around? And do we have the players that can win in spite of him? I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, Fred. Tangible evidence.
We do. I think our talent level, I think we're better than any of those teams battling for eight. I think if you asked 29 of the 30 GMs in the league would say, do you like the talent of the Charlotte Hornets, the New York Knicks, Atlanta Hawks, take all those teams? Or do you like the Chicago Bulls roster? I think the vast majority would take the Bulls. Do you concur? And if so, which one would you take ahead of the Bulls?
I think, I believe talent-wise, that they actually do have better rosters than a lot of these teams. I think it's just the screw-ups of Jim Boylan this year have left me kind of concerned going forward, at least this season. And I'm not sure if, though, the sum of the parts has actually led me to believe that they're going to be able to win games. I think they have a lot of really good pieces, Fred. I haven't seen a turn into wins yet. So I'm a little skeptical. I'm like the state of Missouri. You got to show me. I'm the show me state right now. Like, yeah. give me some evidence,
fair,
and I'll be.
That's a fair critique. I will say, though, like the teams that are battling for that last spot, if you go through them again, the Magic, the Hornets, the Pistons, the Wizards. Those are the teams battling for that spot. The Bulls are better than all those teams. So when Otto comes back, you know, I think they're going to be significantly better than those teams. You know, the seventh seed is 16-18. And the Bulls are four games out of the seventh seed. They've lost five in a row, the Nets. Five in a row. Mm-hmm. Bulls have lost three in a row. You know, so it's entirely possible. You look at the bottom of the bottom four teams, the 76ers, Pacers, Nets, and Magic, all those teams are on losing streaks. It's 5, 6, 7, 8. 76ers lost four in a row, Pacers two in a row, Nets five in a row, and Magic just lost their last game. So a lot of teams are struggling there down that stretch. If I were the Bulls, I'd absolutely go for that eighth playoff seed. I think you got to ask yourself, do you believe in your core four? I do, and I know I'm in the minority here. And I also think the complementary pieces, like a player like Chris Dunn, is very good. Again, big picture, because of our head coach, we've significantly underachieved. Like, I think we should be 16-18. Just think about it. Can you pick out three games that where the Bulls should have won? Yes.
I can give you more than that.
They can give you more than that. Right. So my prediction was correct. I just could not. The gifts of a prophet are sometimes obscured by the idiocy of a head coach. Somewhere that's written.
Well, now it is said. Spoken, let it be done. So I think it's good to end there, Fred. But before I let you go, I have to tell you, you are You are joining Big Dave Watson as a member of the Three Timers Club on the Rebuildable Podcast. So welcome. Welcome to the Three Timers Club. Yeah, one of the rules that Dave Watson put into place is that the person that joins the Three Timers Club gets to pick the next guest that comes on the Rebuildable Podcast. So, Fred, I want you to let me know who you think should be the next guest on this podcast, on the Rebuildable Podcast.
I'm very, I say there's few people I respect more, love more in Bulls Twitterverse or Bulls fandom than Big Dave Watson of the Bulls Outsiders. I think he's a brilliant mind. Mm-hmm. Not only that, like a brilliant person and a super guy. And his brother is also very underrated talent. John Watson. Boy, this is a tough one. Normally, I probably say my arch nemesis slash friend, Mark Kay from Australia. But would that put him in the three club?
He would join the three timers club.
Yeah, so, I don't want to put him in my era. So let's. How about Bull Scripted? You know him, Keith Franz. He's brilliant. Have you had him on the show?
I have not had him on yet.
You got to have him on. He's great. He's been on Bullseye many, many times. Really smart guy. I mean, there's so many of them out there in mm-hmm. Bulls. Yeah, I go with Keith. He's got a definitely more positive. So I'm a C-Red guy. So he's got a more positive vein. You got to bring him on.
Okay. Well, we will try to make that happen. I might have you help broker that deal so we can get him on, but we'll do our best. We'll try to make sure that we fulfill your wish since you are now a member of the Three Timers Club. And part of that, you get a smoking jacket. You get to
Have you ever had Jack Silverstein on, by the way?
I have. So he was when you guys came on for the Grading Garpack series, he was the first installment of that series when we did that. So yeah, he's an interesting guy. He can go on forever. If you just basically ask him one question, he'll give you about a 10-minute answer. I learned that. But he's great. I mean, that guy is a freaking encyclopedia of knowledge.
He is amazing. Yeah, there's a lot of those guys out there, man. Mm-hmm. C-Dub 2 from Ball, he's another guy I'd highly recommend.
You know who's the most overrated?
I don't want to say anything. I'm worried about the repercussions. Who's the most overrated?
Matt Gentile, Rebuildable Podcast.
Oh, come on. You're huge. I just realized, I don't think I've ever had you on the Bullseye. That's insane. Oh, another guy you got to have on is Walton. Have you ever had him?
Michael Walton?
Michael Walton, great guy. Okay. Super knowledgeable. He was the official rookie of the year for Bullseye in 2019. He's really good.
I follow these guys a lot on Twitter, and so I see all their thoughts and stuff. So I'll throw him into the hopper too, but we'll try to get Bull Scripting on for sure soon. But Fred, it's always a pleasure, and I hope to have you on again later this season.
We got to get out for a beer, man.
We do. I mean, I'm a Bartlett guy just like you.
Yeah, gosh, how have we not done this? Let's all get out to Bannerman.
It's a fun place. I think I'm in. We'll let our listeners know that we're in for this.
Yeah, we should have listeners come out, and we'll really get down. We'll have like a family feud of Bulls knowledge and trivia.
Maybe, just maybe we might do some type of I was thinking about doing something like a Bulls Nation party or something like that with all the different podcasters and stuff. I think it would be interesting. I think it'd be a good outing.
I think that's a great idea, and I'm in. Absolutely.
Look, we're innovators, man. We're innovators.
Some people might say that. Some other things too.
Thanks again for coming on, man, and best of luck with your prophecy.
Sounds good, brother. All the best. Go Bulls, man.
Thank you for listening to the Rebuildable Podcast. Be sure to check out more episodes on Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Rebuildable.com.